The Survivor Specialist, Phil and Will, are back, and we are recapping episode number 3 of Survivor 49. We have a lot to dive into tonight. We had a medevac first snakebite we've seen on Survivor, one that, Will, we had talked about a lot last week. You kind of dissected how it would impact the game, where this snake has to bite, how venomous it is. You really got into that really well last time on the recap. So we're going to be diving into that. We're going to be talking all about Jake's unfortunate exit. And we're going to be talking about the behind-the-scenes look, and we're going to be talking about this format that is so stale, I can't take it anymore. I can't take it anymore. It's just, it's brutal. This is 5 of 6 seasons where we've had a disaster tribe, and Sophie had a line in there which said maybe it's fun to watch. Not anymore. It's not anymore. It really isn't. It really, really isn't in this 3-tribe format. I'm so over it. But Will, talk. What? You think it's fun?
I don't know where you're getting 5 of 6 from. This is the 9th iteration of this format. So if you could clarify your statistics, I would.
5 of the last 6 seasons have had a disaster tribe to start.
5 of the last 6. Okay.
Yeah. Five of the last six seasons had a disaster tribe to start. It was, yeah. And that's what I'm so bored of and so over. It's the same story every time. And look, there's a little bit more emotion with this one because of the way Jake just went out. But when you've seen the same storyline, the first act of every season of Survivor for the last 6 seasons has been the exact same, with the exception of Mother Vive going off. That's it. It's the only season that's different. And that's
is that her name now? Mother Vive? I'm in.
I don't know. Maybe. So everybody says, I thought you loved it last week. I just have to give props when it's good because it's always so bad. So anyway, Will.
Ouch. Yeah, I don't know where you want to start. There's a ton to get to. For me, I would say this was actually my favorite episode of the season. I know there's a lot to be disappointed by. As you mentioned, this kind of disaster tribe, this repeating storyline. Maybe it's not the most exciting, at least tonight with the snake bite. And then honestly, the vote for me, you know, look, we probably all would play the idol in Alex's situation. But part of me thought, just from what we get from Alex, he's a little bit brash, a little bit cocky. Like, there was a world where I could see Alex potentially not playing it and the other two voting him out. I know it was extremely unlikely, but I felt like the vote, at least to me, was the most interesting of the 3 votes we've had so far, and that you have this group of 3 and there's not really an obvious way to go, and one person has an idol, and it's a bit prisoner dilemma-y without it being a ship wheel. I just thought the dynamics of this vote were, I was more interested in the final act of this. I was curious to see how these conversations would go. Even I thought Tribal Council was funny, how they were assuming that Alex was going to play, and then Jeff kind of insinuates, like, you guys are on board with this, or you realize he doesn't have to, right? And then that, I thought there was this idol song and dance with only 3 people and really nowhere to hide that, you know, the first episode, it was between Nicole and Annie. And on that recap, Phil, you asked me point blank, who would you rather go home? And I looked at you dead in the eye. I said, Phil, the saddest part for me was that it didn't matter. I did not really care because I didn't like really fall in love with either of those characters. And I felt whoever didn't go home that week was going home next. Literally the next episode, Annie goes home in an extremely predictable boot. So, look, I know there's things to nitpick and things not to like about this episode. I thought the behind-the-scenes snakebite stuff, do we want that every episode of Survivor? Absolutely not. But does it break up some of the monotony, and do we get something completely new and something for the first time in 49 seasons? We did, and then we got, again, I think the most interesting vote of the season. So, for me, this was my favorite episode of the season. Doesn't mean I love the episode. Not really saying this is great Survivor or this is the gold standard of what we need every episode to be, but through 3 episodes, this was far, far and away the most compelling.
It's like how last week I said I thought that was a massive improvement over the premiere, and everybody's saying, Phil, you loved it. You keep saying you loved it. There's now been close to 625 episodes of Survivor. It's probably around 575, 576. It's just a massive improvement from the premiere. Doesn't mean it's very good. Look, I get where you're coming from. I think for me, because I do watch the show and because I can't turn this part of my brain
off. You watch the show? Wow.
No, I watch the show so much from the standpoint of the edit, the edit, the edit, the edit. And so for me, when Jake goes out as one of the 2 main stars of the season up to this point, and he goes out in the fashion that he did, Alex and Sophie had been so set up to carry the torch here that I never felt like it wasn't going to be Jeremiah going home. Even down to the point where if Alex hadn't played his idol and we saw his name come up first, I still knew Sophie was siding with Alex. I think I said this exact thing in the predictions episode with Rachel, where I said, I think that this is going to be Jeremiah, and it's going to be Sophie, and it's going to be Alex, and Sophie is going to convince Alex not to play his idol and then vote with him. Now, ultimately, Alex played his idol. He didn't need to, but I would have played my idol in this position 100% of the time. I say all the time, I get an idol, I'm playing it right away. In this one, you have to play it because going home and being blindsided in that 2-1 is too much of a risk. But no part of me ever felt like it wasn't going to be Jeremiah tonight. And I think that's where, you know, they really telegraphed it to me. I feel really bad for Jeremiah. I feel really bad for Jake. I mean, this is a nightmare type situation. That's Survivor, I guess. But, you know, for me, it just, I came into this episode, I had Jeremiah ranked 15 and Jake ranked 16 because we see Jake on the stretcher in the preview that aired about 27 times during CBS Sunday Football. And I put them at 15 and 16. I'm not the slightest bit surprised. Even if it is a true prisoner's dilemma, it was almost like having the notes of what everybody was most likely to choose while watching the prisoner's dilemma take place.
Yeah, maybe I just wasn't as sure as you. Obviously, that was the right. I don't know. There's, I think, more to discuss in this vote, at least. I find it to be interesting because, look, you can say Alex played this correctly, but if we're looking technically from a Survivor gameplay perspective, he just wasted an idol. He did not play this correctly.
Like, yeah.
If you haven't, and that's how you often define a mistake in games like this. I read a poker book once, and it says a mistake in poker is when you can see the hand of all your opponents. You can see everyone's cards. And if you can see, if you would have been able to see their cards, would you have done something differently? If the answer is yes, then you made a mistake. That's how you can qualify a mistake. Here, if they know that Alex is playing his idol, maybe they do something different. I don't know. I don't know what they could have done. But Alex definitely makes a mistake. If he can see the votes from his competitors, he saves his idol and he's fine. So he made a mistake tonight.
And especially with the swap now coming up, Alex is going into that without his idol and potentially without his only ally, the only person who knows him in the entire game. Now, you know, we're coming up to Philippines in our rewatch for Every Season Matters. We've seen Malcolm and Denise play this exact game. We have seen this work. Now we're getting an authentic full tribe swap next week. People are mixing and matching. They're all dropping their buffs. So it's not just one go here, one go there, but we have seen this work where you can get to Final Four if you start aligning with the right people. And so maybe that's what's going to happen here is Sophie and Alex are able to align with the right people and they carry this through and they ultimately pull out the win or, you know, do it for Jake, whatever it is. Alex is definitely going in weakened though. I mean, tonight Alex lost his closest ally. He lost two members of his core four and he lost his idol. It doesn't get much worse than that. To survive an episode and lose all that, that's bad.
And that's why I honestly think the vote is more worth discussing just because he didn't have to lose his idol. Is that worth having a conversation about? I know we want to jump ahead. Are we finally going to get two tribes? That was one of my first thoughts when it was Jake, or it wasn't when Jake got medevaced. It was when Jeff said, whoever's losing is voting someone out tonight. And once that puzzle started coming together for the red tribe and yellow tribe, my brain went, oh my gosh, they're going down to two. Oh my gosh, they can't run a challenge with two. Oh my gosh, we're getting a tribe swap. Oh my gosh, are we going to get two tribes the first time in the new era? So stoked on it. But are we? I mean, could they just take 14 people and mix them up to three? Because that's how the challenges are probably designed. I don't think a swap to two is on the cards. It'll be interesting.
They're
going to
do this for one episode. They'll probably move the final 10 challenge up, right?
Yeah, maybe they move. I don't know if it's built yet. It depends on the locations. It will be interesting to see I have to look at the challenge course and see, was there a third lane there? And did they shift things around? Can you see kind of dirt popping up? Can you see where things might be? I mean, I know they get a good job of cleaning all that up, but I doubt two tribes was ever in the plan in that, you know, it makes the most sense here. Obviously, you're at 14 people. Why don't do two tribes of seven for one round instead of doing three tribe? But the challenge, I'm sure, was built for three lanes.
Yeah, actually, I can't. It's not up yet on Paramount Plus. Like, it's not in the library yet, so I'd have to look. That's a good point, though.
Yeah, and 14 into three, I get it's not divisible, but you just do 5-5-4, and that's the way the cookie crumbles. Two people go on a journey together.
Yeah, you actually make Alex and Sophie. 4-4-4. You give Alex and Sophie, I don't know, like, who are the two most useless people in challenges? You give those to Alex and Sophie and say, okay, good. Good luck. Go ahead, play.
Perfect. Ahead. Yeah. I guess it sucks to be you guys. I mean, we've seen a lot of, I don't know. There's so many things to dance around here. Are we done with the vote? Are we done with?
Here's what I'll say. Does he make the wrong move? Technically, yes.
Yes.
I don't have the courage to make that move, though.
No,
I don't have the courage. If you're on
Survivor, it's that simple.
And also, you have to think, he knows that Jeremiah and Sophie were getting close because of how close he was to Jake. So there has to be a little paranoia in your mind of, wait, were they becoming the two? Because Sophie clearly knows this game so well. Jeremiah says at the end, I tried for 24 years to get on this show. They know the game so well. They're not going to allow themselves to be the third in an alliance of three on a disaster tribe. So there is part of me that maybe Alex was saying, these two go off a lot together. This is scary. Maybe they're trying to dupe me, get me out with the idol. And then the two of them go, I would play the idol. I would play the idol every time, even if it's the wrong move. I think you have to do it.
Yes. And then from the perspective, I guess Jeremiah has to vote for Alex here. He's not going to vote Sophie.
Yeah.
Because I think he knows that Alex is not going to write Sophie's name down. So if you are Sophie, do you gamble on it? Do you write down Alex's name and say, you know what? If Alex doesn't play his idol, we get the idol out. I now have Jeremiah. I was never that close with Alex. I knew we were in alliance. I mean, I guess they are somewhat close, but at this point, she said it to us straight up. She would rather have Jeremiah in the game. Yeah. Do you put two votes on Alex and just cross your fingers that he doesn't play it? And then even if he does play it, you know that he's writing Jeremiah's name down. So it would be 1-0 vote. Jeremiah goes home and you're not any risk to yourself at all. You're not risking yourself going home. The risk is losing an ally in Alex if he plays the idol. But if you're a Survivor fan, if you've been watching the show for 24 years, you probably know that when a tribe gets down to two, they're going to do a tribe swap.
Yeah.
And that you don't know
anybody else on this island. Sophie hasn't gone on a journey or anything. She doesn't know anybody else on this island. You have to play this safely. And look, even if she'd rather go with Jeremiah, she has Alex thinking, I'm with you, buddy. We're good. She knew Alex wasn't voting for her. The concern was, you know, where is Jeremiah going to vote? I don't think Sophie made any mistakes here. I think Sophie played this safe and perfectly and now is for sure aligned with Alex. If Alex had the idol and Alex plays the idol, you know, now they're in this situation that they're in where she says, damn, I'm sorry, but I get why you did it. If he doesn't play the idol, she says, see, I told you you could trust me. Let's move through this game and make sure if I'm ever in trouble, you play that too.
Yeah, probably the right move, and I'm not arguing for it. I just thought it would be worth kind of parsing out what does that option look like and what is her risk. And her risk here is never going home. She's never
in trouble.
So maybe
the only way she's
make a bigger move or play a little bit more aggressively instead of playing, you know, taking the conservative route. But you're right.
One vote is the only way that she could be in trouble, but that would require Alex to vote for her and her to vote.
Alex or Jeremiah, neither were voting her. So it's like a 1-1-1 was even possible. You're not allowed to vote for yourself. So, I mean, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. We can move on to other business. We've tackled the vote. I just wanted to give the vote its due. I thought out of the first three votes, it was the most interesting. And there was just the conversations and the pairing, even though, yes, it felt like Jeremiah the entire time. And I'm not saying it was shocking or surprising, but neither were the other votes. There was just more intrigue here.
There was a lot more intrigue here for sure. I mean, Annie, they tell you is going home.
Was no doubt.
I think between Annie and Nicole, there was a little bit of drama.
But it didn't matter. It didn't feel like it mattered.
Yeah, I agree with you. You didn't feel connected to either. Let's get to the thing at hand here, right? Jake going home. Jake getting medevac. Jake getting pulled from the game in a way very similar to Russell Swan, Caleb, Scoopin. This is up there with that level where you could see the panic and everything like that from producers. So we're going to go through this whole thing and we're going to talk about it. And look, I'm giving my authentic thoughts on this. If I piss people off, sorry, but I want to give my authentic thoughts on this. And look, I understand this is edited. I understand this is different, but I also want to have a better understanding of why did Jake need to be pulled from this game, in your opinion?
I honestly can't even answer that. It's like, I don't know why Jake was pulled from the game. Do you want me to go first? I feel like you have. Was that rhetorical and you want to start cooking, or do you want me to go? Because I already said some things on this last week. I can get going if you want.
I wanted to see if you had an answer for it, because that is my question coming out of this. And I'm not going to sit here and rant and rave or anything like that. Like, I'm happy Jake is okay. I'm happy Jake is safe. I understand that they had to take crazy levels of precautions, right? If this is in fact a venomous bite, Jake's life is very much at risk, right? Will, you're going to get into that a little bit more, but like, that his life is very much at risk. You said last week, it's between the webbing of the fingers, on the feet, like by the toes. This is a spot where it is definitely in that position of, this could be life-threatening. Close enough, even if it's not, right?
I'll get to it.
Okay, you're going to get to it. So here's my thing. When there's no venom, when it is confirmed that there is no venom, this is a dry bite. The reason we get for him being pulled from the game is he just went through this crazy emotional thing and I don't feel comfortable putting him back in. Okay, then maybe Survivor really isn't supposed to be a TV show anymore, because you are having these people starve on the island, not sleep, not eat, put themselves through crazy physical conditions, put themselves through crazy psychological conditions. As I've gotten to know a lot of Survivor players, they talk about how when they come off, it can be hard to be trusting right when you get back from this game, right? That is the premise of the game, is to strip you from everything that makes you comfortable, and that knocks you out. Like, it knocks you on your ass. We watched Shane Powers back in Panama not smoke after smoking a pack of cigarettes a day for over a decade. And they just kept him in the game. He was delusional. He would scream at Courtney to the point where it was like, thank God this guy's not actually violent, or he might have killed somebody. And so when I watch this happen, I'm not saying that they're making the wrong decision here. And maybe this is also a decision to protect Jake a little bit. I understand you go through this situation where it's a life-threatening situation. You see your life flash before your eyes, knowing that your child is going to be born in days. And you have this moment of, oh my God, I almost came out here and died, and trying to make a better life for my family. I in turn have it where now my child is going to grow up without a father. I get that. That's crazy. But the reasoning that we got from the doctor was so weak to me, and it made no sense. And it felt so overly cautious for the sake of being overly cautious. And Jake never actually got to give a real say into it. So I don't like this. I don't mind the way the whole thing was handled, and we'll get into that. I just don't like how I'm coming out of this, not understanding why, because he just went through this crazy physical and mental thing. Well, so did Andy Rueda. He stayed in the game. Like, I know he didn't get bit by a snake, but he lost his mind out there. We've seen so many people, and this wasn't to the level of Kathy Sleckman and whatever she said back in Fans versus Favorites. To me, this just felt really, 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 really forced. And so, if Jake made this decision, good for Jake, because I understand the fear. But as an audience member, and I'm not talking about this as a podcaster, I'm talking about this as the 4 million people who watch the show and don't listen to any podcast. What they got from this was, we have to take him out of the game because he just went through something really hard, even though he's in no danger of dying or physically having anything bad happen. That's confusion. So that's where I stand.
Yeah. I wish, and we've seen some instances of what I'm about to say before on Survivor, I think, where it's like there's some sort of issue with your body, physical or mental, and they check on you. They go, okay, here's the status, and they put you back in the game and say, we're going to check on you, you know, every day. We're going to do a checkup with Jake and make sure he's mentally, because like you said, this was not a physically threatening bite whatsoever. There was not like, hey, there's 1% chance there's some venom that snuck in and it's going to slowly bleed you out from the inside. No. This is not physical. This is psychological we're talking about here. The venom, that's one of the most deadly snakes in the world, as we talked about last week. If that venom gets you, if it's a venomous bite, and it has to bite, again, it has to bite you in a very, very particular place. It's got to bite you either between the web of your fingers, which I had said last week, and I was thinking of the other spot, and it didn't really come to me, but it's between the webbing of your toes. That's it. Like, those are the only two places it can get you, and like, it was on the foot, which I guess you could look, they had to take him, they had to make sure he's good, because if somehow, some way, like, I'm not questioning that whatsoever. Like, get him to medical care, medical care instantly as soon as you can. Rush, get the boat out. Doesn't matter what crew members are out there, all hands on deck. Rush this guy into the medical tent or the medical center they have at base camp. Absolutely not questioning that whatsoever. But we know, like, this is a known snake. This is one of Fiji's very few exotic wild animals that they can even tout to tourists and to go check out. These snakes are very prevalent. They're not that rare, and they don't really swim in the open water. Jeff said at the challenge, we've been working here, you don't really see them in the open water. They're in, they kind of by the reefs, and they're at by the beaches where the waves are washing up on shore. They like the shallow water. I've seen a bunch of these when I was out in Fiji. The locals will pick them up. This is a very known entity. So there is no argument to be made that we don't know enough about this snake. We don't know enough about the bite that, like, Jake's life is at all at risk. We can rule that out. So we're talking pure psychological. And I wish that's, I mean, you kind of said it, Phil. It's like, were they protecting Jake? Did Jake, there is a world to me in which Jake was freaking out, being like, oh my gosh, I just got bit by one of the most venomous snakes in the world. I'm on a stretcher being brought into medical. I have an IV. I have oxygen. I have all this. You can see the crew members rushing me around and how freaked out they are. And you're like, holy crap. Am I literally about to eat it? Am I about to die? Is my entire being going to be over? And have a feeling of this ain't worth it. And they tell you you're okay, but you had that feeling and you have a baby on the way. You are going to be a father. And he said that multiple times. It's literally all we heard from him throughout this whole experience, throughout this whole sequence was, I have a baby on the way. I'm going to be a father. I have a baby on the way. I'm going to be a father. If that's his mindset, he might have just said, yo, I'm out. Like, I don't need to go back there. I've had the flashing before my eyes. I played Survivor. Like, I just went to a place in my mind I don't need to get to again. And look, I've had fun. I've been on the disaster tribe. My chances of winning probably aren't that high. I love this game, but nothing compares to having a baby and being a father. And that moment trumps all. I mean, I even got a little bit, I don't want to like really put this theory out there, but I got a little bit of like All-Stars, Jenna Maraska, what am I doing out here? Mm-hmm. It's almost like a little birdie came and whispered to Jenna, hey, your mom's in really bad shape. Like, are you really going to win again? You've already won the show. Why are you out here? And she quits. She goes home, sees her mom, and her mom dies, what, like the next day or like two days later. And it's like, good thing she quit. It's almost like someone got to her. I don't think that's what happened here, but it's that flavor. It's Jake being like, wait, my kid's on the way. I'm on a silly TV show. I know you can win $1 million, but like, there are more important things. I have priorities now that I didn't before. When I saw my life flash before my eyes, I thought death was even like, it death really became a real possibility in my brain. I want out of here. Like, send me home. I want to go see my baby be born. I'm over, like, I'm done. But if that is what actually happened, that is a story, and that is a unique story, and that is honestly would have been incredible. And I know you want to protect the guy, and you want to save him from all the internet hate that say, oh, you loser, or you suck, like, I can't believe you quit, like, you're a baby, you're a wuss, and like, protect the dude. I get it, but that is so compelling. That's so human, if that's the reason. And honestly, I can't really think of another reason. If they were really worried about him psychologically, put him back and check up on him.
Yeah.
Okay. And then if he starts losing it, pull him from the game. All good. No complaints from me. But there is something going on. Either Jake wanted to go home, or someone told him his baby was on the way. And I don't know. It's so bizarre, because I'm telling you, these snakes, everyone knows out there. Everyone knows. You are told. It's got to bite you between the webbing of your fingers or the webbing of your feet, and it bit him on the bottom of his foot. Like, I don't know. I've been talking forever. It doesn't feel right to me.
It's all fair. And again, this isn't us trying to say, you know, Jake, when you were saying, oh, the internet hate and all that, I'm not saying that Jake made a wrong decision. If he did make this decision, I would watch Jake play Survivor again, because this is such a freak thing. And look, like, I understand if you have kind of a triggering, look, this is silly comparatively, right? But like, I hate elevators. I've been stuck on an elevator for an extended period of time, and they freak me out now, because When you're stuck in one and you can't get out, you start looking around saying, holy shit. So we were at freaking Disney and I'm on freaking Tower of Terror and we get stuck and I'm like, this sucks. And they say, okay, we got you off. Do you want to ride it now? And I'm like, absolutely not. I'm not going right back on that. So that's a much smaller version. But when you're triggered to something, I can understand why you would say, okay, there's a trauma here. I don't want to be a part of that. That doesn't mean that Jake can't come back and play Survivor for 51, 52, 53, 54. For sure, he could come back and play again. It's just in that initial moment, you say to yourself, nope, this isn't worth it. For them to hide that, if that was the case.
I don't know if it was.
And we don't know. But if that was the case, that's really, really terrible storytelling. And you're leaving way too many questions. Now, if that's not the case, if Jake would have been willing to go back out there, there's no reason to pull him from the game. And based on the reasonings that this doctor gave, and I'm not a doctor, but based on the reasonings that this doctor gave, everybody should be pulled from Survivor. I'm sorry. Every single person should be pulled from Survivor because you don't think Sophie's going through it? She's going through like really insane, exhausting things because his reasoning wasn't, oh yeah, he went through this moment and, you know, psychologically, mentally, what's that going to be like for him? How many people are on Survivor and are going through crazy psychological and physical things? I know that it hasn't really happened on this season, but back in the early days, it was happening all the time, all the time. And so that is what this game is. And that reason just isn't good enough for a Survivor fan. And people can disagree with me on this, but I've been watching this since day two, since season two. When you sit down and you watch this since season two and you see what they keep people out there for that are worse scenarios than oh, it's just mental. It doesn't make sense to me. There has to be more to it. And if there isn't, I don't get it. And I want more of an explanation. I don't want a bullshit explanation on the On Fire podcast or something. I want a real explanation. I don't want some, oh, I'm gonna milk it and say what's gonna be great for the headlines. Like, as Survivor fans, we should really know what happened here.
Yeah. I'm trying to see, Phil, if we can talk out an explanation that makes sense other than the one we've posited with, like, maybe Jake was, after going through this experience, was like, hey, I've had enough. I have a baby on the way. I'm gonna be a father. I'm done. Like, and then they make it look like the medical person pulls him and they're covering. That's one explanation. I think that's the front runner for me. And again, I'm not saying we're correct in this, but I'm struggling to think of an alternative because, Phil, when we talked about this last week, I mean, part of me tonight watching, Phil, when I saw it and it was a bite on the foot, I'm like, okay, clearly the guy's fine. Like, I was not worrying about Jake's life or that there was venom from that instance just because I bet on those beaches and know about those snakes. Even, and I know everyone that Survivor knows this too, I'm pretty sure. Like, if you're out and feel like, you know this. So I honestly thought for a little bit that it's like, let's put him on the boat, let's take him to the medical, let's keep the cameras rolling, let's put him on stretchers, almost as like, this is a cool little segment. We've never shown anything like this. We haven't had a venomous snake bite in 49 seasons of people living in a jungle in exotic locations around the world. We finally got a venomous snake bite. We know it's dry. Let's milk this a little bit. Like, let's get the boat. Like, let's rush. Let's show the crew members. Like, let's build up this segment because it could be really compelling television. I believe it was compelling television.
Great.
When the doctor said he's not coming back, my jaw dropped. I was like, huh? What? I thought this was all some, not that they were faking it, but like, okay, we are going to have to make sure he's okay. Like, we have to take him to medical. He was bit by a venomous snake, but like everyone on the crew and SAD and medical, they're like, well, he wasn't bit between the web of his fingers.
And here's the thing.
Like, he's going to be fine, but we have to double check. We have to make sure. We have to run some tests. Let's film it. Let's roll on it and see how this goes. And for them, I mean, they might. And not to say it's not scary or traumatic. I do not want to downplay being bit by a venomous snake. Like, it would freak me the hell out. Even if I got bit on the arm or the foot and I know about this like webbing thing, and hey, maybe I'm completely off base with the webbing thing. Maybe it's a myth. Maybe it's one of those like urban legends, but that is what I've been told by people, like very local Fijians. That's what I've been told. Still got to do the check. Again, you still got to take him. I just thought they were kind of making a molehill out of a mountain out of a molehill is kind of where I thought this was going. It's like, no, he's good to go back in the game. The bite's dry. We're good. So I don't know. Like, what were they worried about?
And here's, like, I want to put this comment up because LED Paint says the medical evaluation seemed more focused on the potential for health complications that they would need to monitor. I thought it was pretty clear, but it wasn't physical health complications. They were saying this is a dry bite. We are not concerned about any type of venomous situation here. They had made that abundantly clear. They were talking about mental. Like, we've talked about, it's just mental. How is he going to do? What's going to be the PTSD if he sees another one of these snakes? I feel like you have to worry about when the time comes. Like, I don't know. It just.
Well, then Jeff had this rant about what we want to give you, you know, food and water and air conditioning to make you feel comfortable. And we can't do that. So we can't treat you. He doesn't need to be treated at this point.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
He's had two very skinny little things prick his foot. It probably hurt. There's no venom. What are we doing? Yeah. I'm left very, very confused by this. I did find the sequence extremely compelling, though. I will say that.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, look, going back behind the scenes and stuff like that, I get it. I mean, we've never seen anything like this before. I agree with you. You know, you're running through and you're seeing what the medical team is truly doing, because now, you know, if you were ever on Survivor and you did get bit by this snake and it was venomous, you know what is going to take place on the island in that take in that time, right? Like, in the next 30 minutes, this is what your life looks like. You get to see inside, you get to see how the medical team handles everything. But I think the way this scene ended, and maybe I am totally off the mark, and I'm okay. If I'm totally off the mark, tell me, right? Because again, I'm not a doctor, but the way that this scene ended kind of didn't make the medical team look all that good. I'm sorry. They looked really good. And then the way it ended, the reasoning and all that made no sense. I'm not going to change my opinion on that until I hear something that makes a different lick of sense. It was still a great moment. It was still great TV, but we went through all of that to be told he's going to live. Everything's fine. He doesn't need any more medical attention. We just want to make sure he stays in air conditioning and gets a good night's rest. I mean, Matthew fell off a rock and broke his shoulder, and you kept him out there for 9 days.
Yeah, it feels like something's up here, because you can't medically pull someone when there's no medical threat. I mean, that's what it was. I kind of want to play it back and listen to it just because it's so. Jeff's like, would you feel comfortable? He goes, no, I would not feel comfortable putting him back out there. Why? What's the risk of what? Why? What's the risk? When you pull someone from the game, you're saying their life, it's always been this. Their life is potentially in danger if we leave them out there, or they could risk potential long-term damage, whether it's an injury,
Penner could have lost his leg.
We might have to amputate your hand. Yeah, it's not life-threatening, but you're going to lose a hand, and that's kind of a big deal. You kind of want both your hands. Here, the risk was, I just don't think he's going to be comfortable out there. It's Survivor.
Yeah, I know, man. That's on production. Tell the story. Tell the story.
The more we talk about it, the more I'm convinced Jake was, he went through a bear. And if that's Jake's feeling, I'm not trying to, like, don't want to be someone here ripping on Jake. I just feel like if that was his decision, the show doesn't need to protect him. We all would have understood. You got 100%. Bit by a venomous snake. You're about to be a father. Very traumatic. You felt things that very few people get to feel or experience. Like, one's going to hold that against you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, oh, your wife's pregnant. It's like, oh, your wife's pregnant, and like the baby could be due anytime. And now it's like, oh my gosh, now when you're thinking about your kid and you're thinking about your wife, mm-hmm. and the baby's not even born yet, you're like, I mean, do you think someone even told them, like, baby still isn't born if you want to get out of here? I mean, I don't know. I don't want to suggest anything, but it's just bizarre. It's too bizarre.
And again, you're 100% right, because this does remind me the most of the Terry situation when he got pulled from the game in Second Chance. Like, I'd waited 10 years to watch Terry play Survivor again. He'd waited 10 years to go back out there. the second you find out that your son has had a serious medical situation, he says, great, I'm getting off this island. Nobody sat there and said, I can't believe, what'd you say?
Yeah, you're like, I'm out of here. You don't need to think twice.
Yeah, that's it. And I sit there and I say, damn, I'm really bummed that's the way Terry's second time went. But I would never question this, ever. Like, understood 100%. And that was this scenario. And especially for a show that is falling back. Now our quirky character who's only talked about poop so far, guess what her backstory is, Will? She's always been the outcast. And people did like her growing up. And she lost all her friends. Every character is the same thing with that story. Everybody grew up a loser, according to the show. That's
lovable losers is the title of the episode.
That's it. Like, that's the only story the show knows how to tell anymore. And you have this moment where you can have a guy saying, it has been my dream to be here for so long, but I need to go home and be there for my wife and see my child be born because I just realized what I could have lost and what they could have lost. And you applaud that. That would be incredible.
And I just,
for some reason, it went a different route.
I just watched it back. He says nothing. He says, we have to protect you. Protect him from what?
From the internet trolls who are going to hate him. The ones who are going to be commenting on this video saying, you guys are assholes. They had to protect him from that.
I mean, but then he also, when Jake hears the news, he like puts his hand over his face. And I'm not saying that he couldn't be acting, but like to accuse him of acting there also feels kind of like a dick move.
Yeah, I mean, that feels like a dick move. I think Jake was being authentic. I think Jake might have said this, I need to make a decision for me and for my family. And that's totally respectable.
And so they film the scene of the doctor saying it medically and providing this BS medical excuse. And then he's doing, I mean, he's seriously devastated, but he knows it's coming. I mean, I would hate to be wrong on this. I feel bad that we're even talking about it, but honestly, Phil, it is the most likely explanation. It's too bizarre to me.
It's weird. And look, again, we could be off the mark. You guys,
we could be off the mark, and that's, we don't have any information. I'm just saying, like, this snake, again, this isn't some mysterious creature. This is a very known entity, and they know he's fine from the snake bite.
And the other thing that bothers me, Will, and I will say this now, like, obviously we haven't lost viewers since we've been talking about this or anything like that. So we appreciate everybody sticking with it. We're on here doing a podcast for a show that we love, right? That's what we are doing. So if we're off the mark, we're kind of off the mark because what we watched on TV, we're having to put so many pieces together. They're kind of relying on the people who are on their phone, half paying attention, texting, and they go, oh, did you see last night that guy got bit by a snake? That was crazy. That's all they're paying attention to. That feels like what this was edited for. It felt like it was edited for the people who are half paying attention. I was fully paying attention because I wanted to know what was going on, and I did not get the full answer. So if I'm sitting here making a total ass out of myself, maybe part of it is my fault, but also
totally possible. The show didn't tell me. Yeah, we have to speculate because we don't have answers. It's the most nothing medical evacuation in the history of a show, and I see a comment here. Let's move on, guys. Enough snake talk. This is like a crazy medical precedent. We've never seen anything like this where they pull someone because I can't even name the reason. That's how insane this is. Like every other quit or medevac or quitevac or mediquit. Mediquit was a term that popped up at some point. I don't know when I saw it, but like Matt was a mediquit.
People won't let us call it a medevac. It's like
he is a mediquit, where it's like you're quitting, but it's because you have long-term medical reason. The show's not pulling you, but it is kind of, it's better than a quit where you're like, I can't take it anymore. I like the distinction, but this is weird. Like this is a weird precedent.
All right. Well, let's move on then. Here, so we'll move on for you, Turgenstein. Like the video though. Make sure you like the video because if we're going to move on, we're doing what you ask. Make sure you like the video. Everybody else who's sitting here, who's listening to us rant, if you made it this far, you must like something we're saying. So please like the video. That helps. It helps go a long way, especially. And subscribe if you haven't done that yet. But, you know, it's been tough early on in the season because people aren't watching this, I don't feel like, as intently live as they were. I mean, the numbers just across the board are down from 47 and down from 48. So please, everybody, like this video. It helps us stay there at the top so we can keep providing these scintillating takes like we are doing. Here we go. I want to jump into confessionals here because we really didn't hear much from the other tribes. And we'll talk about the Red Tribe and Rizzo finding his and finding his beware advantage. But I want to start off with the confessional count because I think that this, with a tribe swap coming up next week, and we're going to be sitting there going, well, do you think it's this person or that person? It's been too telling at this point. So we have Sophie getting 10. We had Alex getting six. MC and Sage came to life out of nowhere, right? They both got 4. Jeremiah got 3. He's out. Jake, Jason, Nate, Rizzo, Savannah all got 2. Jawan, Shannon, Steven got 1. Christina got a 0 again. The other Sophie was irrelevant for the second time in 3 episodes, and Matt got nothing. So next week, when you see the preview for next time on Survivor and they're saying, I don't know about this Matt guy, something tells me that that Matt guy is probably not going to be in too good a shape. So I just want to talk about this a little bit because obviously where all the drama happened, that's going to change up the edit of the show. We saw that last season with the Joe and Eva moment that took up a huge portion. Joe doesn't even get a confessional in that episode. There's all these different things. How did you feel about the way the other tribes were handled in this episode, being that they make up 12 of the final 14 people on this season?
Yeah, it was so heavily blue because of the snake. And then because blue loses a good tribal council, it's almost like we need to, we need to get to know these people more. I can't really say I don't like them or that they're bad casting choices. I just don't know them. Like even Rizzo and Savannah, you think would be over edited and shoved down our throats because they're playing on 50. I feel like we've gotten a very low dosage of that. Even that's how little we've seen from Red and Yellow. I wish I had a better answer for you. I can't wait to see how the tribes work out. It's kind of like we're starting a new premiere next week. It feels like it really feels like we are entering a completely new phase of this game. We've spent the first 3 episodes exclusively with one tribe. You know, obviously there's little things here and there, but none of these other tribes went to tribal council. Like these core fours, it's not going to matter when it's all shuffled up. Sure, some of the relationships are going to hold and who has an idol and this, but we're kind of going in blind here next week. I don't have a good feel for where things sit, and I currently at this point don't know who's on a tribe with who. From reading some of the chat earlier, I know the chat just flies by. It felt like the chat is pretty confident that it's 2 tribes. So yeah. I think that's the silver lining from this episode that we have to take. And I'm excited to see 2 tribes. But other than that, Phil, I mean, do you see a direction for this season?
Here's my direction. You want to know what it is? Honestly, I feel like it's very Philippines. And I don't just mean that because we just got down to 2 and now they're going to do a tribe. Red feels important. Yellow doesn't. Which is exactly how Philippines was, but like kind of the opposite, where there were the Abby, Pete, RC, Scoopin, Lisa, they feel important. Where Red, that Calabao tribe, aside from Jonathan and Jeff Kent, they didn't feel important at all. And that's where I'm feeling right now. So reverse the colors here. This yellow tribe does not feel like they are integral to the final storyline, with the exception of Steven and maybe MC.
MC and Steven, yeah, that seems to be an important relationship. And yeah.
And then for the red tribe,
wait, I'm trying to even think. Was it Steven who got the idol?
MC got the idol.
No, MC got the idol.
Because she had to put in her Steven. Pants and was scared because of the
right. She told Steven, and then Riz God got it on the other tribe, but he showed everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we can
talk Riz God told that. Everybody. But again, neither one of them actually have the idol. Because
they haven't lost. So
yeah, they haven't lost. So nobody has anything. And now they're both going to be, they could potentially be on the same tribe, which I'd be curious to see how this is going to shake out. Maybe this is why we didn't hear so much idol talk in the earlier episodes, because maybe it was happening, but it doesn't end up being really relevant at all. And this was just a way to make sure that Riz God, who I was concerned, I'm sitting here saying, look, this guy took a spot on 50 from somebody. We're about to hear one confessional from him in 2 episodes, because he hadn't spoken until the other tribe lost. And I said, maybe they're not going to go back to red and they're just going to hang at blue. And thankfully they did. So we got a little bit
more. They did go back. Yeah.
But I feel like right now, this is again, where I'm complaining about the format. And I
just need to go to this. We can get into it here. I want to hear what you have to say, but I'm down to go at the format a little bit.
Because when you sit here and you tell me that in season 44, The Tika tribe gets decimated. The Tika 3 end up being important, but the Tika tribe gets decimated. First act of that season doesn't matter. It Claire, Sarah, Josh, none of it matters. None of it matters. And then the show starts again at the merge. Season 44 is not very good. In season 45, the Lulu losers can't get their footing and nothing happens and they keep losing. Now that's an entertaining version of this. But again, act one is a disaster tribe. Season 46, we watch Banu get voted out twice.
But in Emily, just to go back to 45, Emily is the last of Lulu and she goes out at seventh place. The final six is no one from the tribe you're spending the most time with when the show is starting, when the season is forming, where you're supposed to be meeting your characters. You're spending all these time with people that are not even in the finale.
You imagine, so it's about 13 hours of TV now. Imagine if in the Lord of the Rings franchise, in the first hour, you don't really
spoil. No spoilers.
Okay. I take your headphones out. I'm talking about Frodo and Gandalf. You don't see those two characters who are the two most important characters in the thing. That would make no sense. In the first movie, oh, we're not going to have Aragorn. Okay. You can put your headphones back in. Put them back in.
I've never seen The Lord of the Rings. I'm very excited to. I didn't want you to say a character that dies.
You're going to end up hating it. But anyway, no, nobody dies. I didn't say anybody dies. Season 46.
Well, now I know nobody dies.
But so season 46, you have Banu with that situation where we see that. So now we're talking three seasons in a row of the disaster tribe. 47, Genevieve, Mother Veve, thank you very much. The only person representing season 47, which may be the best season of the new era, just showing how out of touch people are at this point. Season 48, guess what? We get a disaster tribe kind of early on, right? We get one tribe that just keeps losing. And guess what? The best placing finisher is seventh place. And now we get a disaster tribe. Five out of six seasons have had the same exact storyline for Act One. Now, I believe that Sophie and Alex have legs. I do believe that these are two people who could be in the final four, final five, final six of this season. But we have watched the exact same first act for five of the last six seasons. It's a bore. It's a snooze. It's awful. I'm tired of it. So even when I watch this happen with Jake and there is legitimate drama and I'm left scratching my head because the most dramatic moment, maybe since the Caleb medevac, does not have a satisfying conclusion in any way, shape, or form. Now I turn around and I say, okay, good. We're going to do a challenge. I wonder who's going to lose. Blue loses. I should have been watching the Yankee game and they lost. I should have just watched the Yankees lose instead of watching Survivor tonight because me, Rachel, and Blake on Sunday's podcast all predicted exactly what would happen in this episode. I'm so over it. It's the same thing for the last six seasons. I don't want it anymore.
Yeah, I don't think it's inherently due to a three tribe start. I think it's the gameplay loop, and this is a bit of flawed game design from Survivor, where Jeff enters the new era and he wants to make the new era punishing. He describes a monster. You have to earn everything. So we always start with one tribe gets their supplies at the marooning. Then the other two tribes have to compete for it in some method. And so you're always starting one tribe in last place. Mm-hmm. Always. That's just how the format of the show works. And then when you don't lose, if you don't win, you don't get your flint. And so you're giving rewards to the people who are winning and you're punishing the team that's losing. And that's going to create a delta of what resources they have. There's now a big gap between where these tribes are. And then you repeat it. They have a reward challenge or they have a mini challenge where you can win a tarp and fishing gear. Now you're making the tribe that just won the first immunity challenges. Now they're getting fishing gear or donuts or coffee or hammocks or pillows. They're sleeping better. They're eating more. They're by the fire. And then you're just driving this one tribe into the ground with your game design loop. So many games have it built in where if you perform poorly, they actually reward you. And I'm not saying Survivor needs to do that, but they don't need to additionally punish you in this way that, hey, you're not going to get your flit. We're not going to give you any tribe supplies. Like, we're not going to give you rice. Like, give the losing team a fighting chance. Like, in Call of Duty, great example. I don't know if anyone plays video games. Great example. You get rewards when you go on a kill streak, which is rewarding the winner, which is a lot of games work. If you do something well in a game, you should get rewarded because you should want to play well. But if you're really bad, they also have something called a death streak. If you die four times in a row without getting a kill,
they give you an additional perk or an additional item, something that gets you back in the fight. Like, hey, man, I know you just got killed four times in a row, but like, here, we're going to throw you a bone. There's quite a few board games in which if you score the fewest amount of points one round, guess who's going first the next round? Guess who gets an advantage?
Rubber
the next
banding, round? Right?
Yeah, no, it's how game design works to keep games balanced. If anyone plays Balatro or watch, or there's a, it's a great game, Balatro. If anyone's played it, they have Major League Balatro, multiplayer, where you go head to head, and when someone loses a life head to head, that player gets money for every life they've lost. So this is all over game design. There's endless examples, and so Survivor does the exact opposite approach of this, and look at the results. The results are you driving one tribe into the ground. So this is fixable. I think you just have to be less punishing.
Or that's just say, hey, is. You're going to lose your flint, but you can win it back before something else. You just have to do this and you can get it back so that you're not going 7 days without it.
I just feel like there was this energy from season 41 and Jeff to really add these new rules. No, there's 26 days now due to COVID restrictions and quarantining. I get it. Well, 26 days, everyone's going to call it soft. We have to ramp up the difficulty. Mm-hmm. 26 days has been here. I don't think everyone has, not that we like it, not that we prefer it, but I think the fan base for the most part is like, hey, we're getting Survivor still. The show is somehow still on. 26 days, so be it. I'm in. I don't think you need to overcompensate for 26 days versus 39 days anymore. And that's what all these punishing things were. And this was the flavor Jeff wanted coming into the new era. We are so far into the new era at this point. Drop this monster bullshit. Drop this. We're taking your stuff. Drop. We're taking your votes. Drop. We're not giving you rice. If you're so focused on the game anyway, let the tribes play. We're just by designing the way the format currently works. You're leaning into much of this, oh, it's a survival show. You got to earn it. You got to fight every last step. It's like, we're not there anymore.
Wait. But if you get bitten by a snake and we prove that it's not venomous, you have to be pulled from the show because your mental health isn't going
to
be right.
Yeah. So is it supposed to be hard?
It's not.
Yeah. The snake is the monster.
It's crazy.
The monster poked out and I guess we can't play.
I totally agree with what you're saying here, because when you sit here and you look at they're losing the flint, who cares? Who watching the show is paying attention to which tribe doesn't have the flint? Nobody cares. I know people don't do water cooler talk anymore because since COVID, we all just sit at home now. But when it used to be the water cooler conversation, Survivor was the water cooler show. What was it about? Did you see that? Are you happy this person survived? What'd you think about the tribal? You know, can you believe this tribe keeps winning? Whatever. Nobody is sitting there saying, oh, that blue tribe's in trouble because they lost their flint. We have done how many podcasts? 9 seasons now, 8 seasons times 13, whatever that is, 80. That's 104 episodes. We're on 3 here. So 107 recap episodes for the new era. I think we've maybe talked about the tribe losing their flint 3 times. No one cares. So dump that, make it something more interesting and more compelling to a viewer. And stop just going with the safe, easy, we've done this, so we'll keep doing it route. Because you're right, that is why it's doing this. And that is why it's driving people into the ground. And it is why we keep getting disaster tribes. And the problem is, it's no longer, it's the same thing as when you cast all underdogs and no top dogs. Then there's nobody to root for because they're all underdogs and there's nobody for them to overcome. So when you get these 2 or 3 people who are left every time from a tribe, you're not getting the same rooting interest you used to get from these people when it happened with Stephanie and Bobby John, when it happened with Malcolm and Denise. We're seeing it so often that it just feels like another part of the show. It doesn't feel special. Look, I like Sophie and Alex a lot more than other versions of this that we have seen recently. Last season, Say and Mary, Say had such a big edit. Cedric, Mary, we didn't really know them at all, but Say never felt like she could win. Sophie and Alex feel like they could win. But there is something seriously missing here. And it's, again, it's going back to the same plot points over and over and over. This is like watching, you know, the Indiana Jones movies. And then they also put out the Young Indiana Jones, which is like a VHS series. There was like 26, 27 of them, whatever it is. Every single one of those was the exact same thing, movie after movie. He just did a different obstacle to get whatever the treasure was. That's this.
Like a Hallmark Christmas movie.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's a good one. I like that.
This is also a great comment. This did cross my mind while watching the show, so I got to throw it up. Another Will Malapo. Every challenge having a puzzle is also part of the problem. Agreed. If you have a tribe that just can't do a puzzle, mm-hmm. and then it's the tribe that can't build a lead because they don't have Flint. Like, they get little leads, but not enough. Like, you got to mix up the ending of some of these challenges for sure. Yeah.
It's only two so far in this season, believe it or not, that have fully ended with the puzzle.
Well, fully ended, but the marooning one, once this puzzle's really the last, jumping on top and ringing the bell, that's kind of just a flourish. I know for our technicality, for our over-under game, I mean, jumping up on a box and ringing a bell with a club is not a puzzle, so we can't count it. But that, you know, that was a crate puzzle that they had to put together. That was the real ending, even though technically we rang a bell.
Yeah, technically. Yeah. Technicalities are important here. All right, let's talk about the red tribe, right? So Rizzo finds this. He reads it out to everybody, tells them all what's going on. This whole tribe went searching together. Jawan got his confessional. Wink, wink. Hey, everybody on this tribe got a confessional in this episode. Not you, Yellow. Not you, but this tribe, everybody got a confessional. What do we think about how this is ultimately going to play out? With Rizzo, do you think he's going to end up getting it and that's what's going to lead him? Do you think he's going to use it for his alliance? He says he told everybody, but it's never leaving his pocket. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm sure he'll use it at an opportune time for him when it makes sense. And if he can somehow disguise that as being for his alliance, whatever his alliance is at the time. I mean, we're switching tribes and who knows when he uses it, how late in the game and new relationships develop. But yeah, this is not a red tribe idol. Rizzo has the idol. I think the most interesting conversation out of this is that both tribes had this same idea, mm-hmm. like, hey, we haven't lost a challenge. I mean, I think it probably is due to them not losing a challenge. Like, hey, we haven't lost a challenge yet. If we're going to merge, like, we should probably get or swap or something. We need to go get this and we should get it together. I thought that was kind of fascinating that was the new meta that you just say it openly to your tribe. And then I guess that way no one can call you sneaky or you're out by yourself looking or you're alone and you can't have any negative shade thrown your way because you're all looking together. But then they look together and they kind of, okay, we're going off in threes or maybe pairs. Seems like everyone's kind of just finding it on their own. I know Rizzo found it. He was completely alone. He's the only one in frame. And then he holds it out and tells everybody. So that we can talk about that. Is that a smart thing to do or not? But I thought that was interesting that both tribes decided to take that approach.
I think that it's the smart thing for Rizzo to do in that situation because Rizzo knows that he's in the majority alliance, so he really has nothing to lose by doing that. I did want to point out, though, with MC and Steven on the Yellow Tribe where they said, we should pair off, and they said, no, we should get a third, and they go back to the tribe and they say, hey, we should split up, and Christina immediately goes, yeah, let's do pairs. I thought that was so funny because then MC tries to cover it and says, yeah, we can do pairs or groups of threes. Yeah, it was so good.
And then Christina goes, okay, boys versus girls. And that's perfect. That's what they wanted. They wanted to divide and conquer where one of that duo is going to see who gets the idol. But I don't know. There's not, I guess we get that MC gets the idol.
And keeps it hidden except to Steven.
But do the other four people on Yellow go, I guess nobody found it or we give up or it's so hard. I guess that's what we're supposed to take away from that.
That's what I'm thinking. What I'm also curious about, and there's a question in here. Zach says, how does he get it if he goes to the Yellow Beach? Because they are specified to the beach. So, like, if MC and Rizgod end up on the same tribe, what happens?
I mean, maybe they're captains.
Yeah, right? I just don't get it. You know, like, I'm very curious what would happen.
See, Phil, and you were praising episode 2 that this is so clear. The audience doesn't need to guess about what happens in different scenarios. It's right in front of you. You lose your vote. If you can't find it, you get your vote back after the tribal that you lose your vote. It's all easy peasy. Praising this season. It's a whole new format. No.
They weren't expecting Jake to get bit by a snake.
It's the same format.
Yeah. I know. They were clearly not planning for a tribe swap. That's what I'll get. They were not planning for a tribe swap on this season.
And if they weren't planning for a tribe swap, that means they weren't planning for a two tribe challenge.
That is for sure. That is for sure. And I bet you this is going to be, you know what this might actually do? This might knock out Mergatory. Because normally they do that two tribe challenge that then becomes an individual challenge. So that would happen at 13, right? That always happens at 13. This is 14. Maybe they're doing it early. They move it up one because they probably built it.
Yeah, no, I think you wouldn't get rid of Murgatroyd. I think you would get rid of the let's split into two groups nonsense that we do. I think that's long gone now.
That's what I meant by Murgatroyd, whatever it is.
No. Murgatroyd is the big challenge. It's always one of the biggest builds, and they split into groups, and then one group is immune. And we've seen a couple iterations of this recently, but we often do see this like right after the Murgatroyd, then they split back up and go to different beaches. And
One of those things. Yeah. So what they'll probably do is take what I think they're probably going to do is the Murgatroyd challenge, if they had already built it, because that was going to be final 13. They had already built that. That's going to be now the final 14 challenge of this part. And then Murgatory will now be whatever they were planning to be the final 12 or final 10 challenge where they were going to split. That's what I
doubt that. I think you're going to see they're going to remove a lane from whatever three tribe challenge they had planned for this episode. Yeah. It'll be a two lane challenge. Easy enough to do, depending on what. I mean, you're just you have to take it down anyway. It doesn't live up there. They reuse these locations all the time. Pull a lane. Run the same challenge you're going to do at 13. You then do your Murgatroyd challenge that you were going to do.
Yeah.
And then lose the split thing because you have a medivac. That's what we're doing.
Okay.
And then Noah Salmon says the idols are at different places. Sure. But it both says you need to dig at Tree Mail, right?
It's the well that you have to go well. To.
Wait, was one the well and one Tree Mail?
I thought they were
because that would solve the tribe swap issue.
But that would be weird for red and blue to both be at the well and yellow to be at Tree Mail. I think they're all.
Yeah, I think they're all at the same spot.
Yeah,
unless there's three things. You have the Tree Mail, the well, and then
the tribe, at the boat.
The tribe flag. No, we haven't seen MC do it yet.
Yeah, but they're saying that's what it said was it was at the boat. Was at the bow of the boat is what you'd have to dig at.
Oh, so maybe they did think about a tribe swap and like, hey, if they aren't the same, they just don't have to dig in the same place.
Maybe she found it at a different time.
Huh.
Interesting. It's weird that two are the same and one is different, but who knows? We'll see. All right. So we pretty much didn't talk about the tribes at all. I mean, I think obviously red's the more important tribe here, but it's like,
I mean, we've talked. I know. What do you want from me, Phil? Man, I can rant about a snake. I can't rant about six people I have heard nothing from, and they haven't gone to tribal council.
You watched the preview?
It's stasis.
You watched the preview,
dude? I forget if I watched the preview. The previews, like I say, you in one ear out the other.
People on the yellow tribe.
Let me do. You filibuster here. I'm gonna do a trailer breakdown.
Do a trailer breakdown, and you can see five of the yellow people on the tribe. It is. And I'm going to say who it is because they show us. It's Savannah.
Okay, we got an aerial.
Wait, I'm filibustering, you said.
Sorry.
Now you're mumbling.
Sorry.
It's Savannah, Rizgod, Jawan, Sophie B, Matt. Those are definitely five of the people on the yellow tribe. So Jawan's in, by the way. That means Jawan is in with the crew. I'm feeling good about that.
Jawan, Savannah, Sophie are all yellow. Matt's yellow, but that could be early. Rizzo's yellow. So Rizzo and Savannah swap. Did you just say all this?
I literally did, yeah.
Okay. I'm watching it live. Sorry.
And then so we don't know where the other nine fall, but we know where five fall. And I will tell you, Savannah.
I don't know. Rizzo, the chat is so damn confident of two tribes. I don't know. Because like I said.
Well, that's a tribe of five. Matt is gone.
I'm saying five, four is fully on the table. And anyone who doesn't think otherwise, I'm sorry. I'm praying for two tribes. I don't think there's been I don't listen really to other Survivor podcasts or even go online that much, but I don't know if there could possibly be someone who brings up that there has never been two tribes at the same time in the new era. Exactly two tribes in the new era. And that how I want to see it so badly, just to have a change of pace here and just break up the format a little bit. Just change it up. I very much, after that preview, I'm not as convinced as all you because we didn't see anyone with a red buff and we didn't see anybody with a blue buff. And it is completely possible that it's 5-5-4, maybe two people go on journeys or exile. I don't know.
I don't either.
They bring Jake back because they're like, oh, wait, dude, you're fine. So then it's 5-5-5.
Again, a lot of people are doing research here, just to go back to the snake thing. A lot of people are doing research here and being like, well, you wouldn't know until 12 hours or something, like whether it was venomous in 24. I don't know if that research is correct or not, but you shouldn't not have correct. To do that research.
Not correct.
You shouldn't have to do that research after we were just told that he was fine. Like, we should be told what's going on.
Dude, if that snake bites you with a venomous bite, you're dead within an hour or like 90 minutes. Like, that's one of the most venomous snakes in the world. That thing, if that bites you, again, it's something with their teeth where it has to be this really, really thin part of your skin. Really thin, and thin enough where it's not just like a blister or like it like grazes your skin. It has to get into your blood. And you only have specific parts of your body that have thin enough skin that reach blood, and it's the webbing. Again, I'm not an expert on snakes. I've just spent a lot of time in Fiji, exactly where they shoot, and I've heard about this snake, and that's what I've been told.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap this up. That's
enough. Let's wrap it up. Not enough snake enough. Talk. We're making that one guy mad that we got back to the snake.
Yeah, I know. We got him back. So anyway, we are going to be live tomorrow. Blake and I will be live with Philip Solomon from Deal or No Deal Island. Always love to have him on because he loves to talk shit. So I'm excited to get his opinion on everything from this episode. He'll be live tomorrow night with us at 5 p.m. Eastern time. On Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern time, I will be live with Sam Phelan from Survivor 47. So following
up. Oh, hell yeah. Rachel, he's so good.
With Sam. I know. Exciting times.
What time is that?
10 a.m. Eastern. You getting up? 7 a.m.?
On what day?
Sunday.
I don't know. If I'm ever going to join a...
That's the one?
That might be the one, yeah.
Now you have to let me know because he says NFL Sunday is appointment viewing for him. So we got to do 7 a.m.
Yeah, he literally works for the Titans or is a reporter for. Oh, okay. Well, still, he's a football guy. We're all football.
Yeah.
That's a lot to ask, but maybe I'm inclined. I was such a fan when he joined you last season. And honestly, I feel like he's a better podcaster than both of us. Honestly.
You know, man, there's a lot of people who are better podcasters than both of us. I'm not going to lie.
Yes, quite a few. But we have a camaraderie that I think that's where we shine.
Untouched, we're just having a good time.
Untouched on our vibes. Maybe we're not the most skilled and most eloquent, but our vibes are high.
Our vibes are high. And then on Monday night, I don't know what time, Tagwick will be live with Bianca and Thomas. She swears she had the idea before RHAP put them both on last week. But Bianca and Thomas will be live with Tagwick on Monday night. If you haven't checked out her episode with Jacob Derwin, you should. It's pretty damn good. Jacob got her in a real studio for that because I guess he works for a podcast studio. It's pretty awesome. So we got a lot of good guests coming up this week. A lot of exciting stuff. Like this video. Subscribe to the channel. Leave us some comments about what you think happened, what you thought about this episode. If you're one of the Survivor players, you know, you can leave us a bunch of middle fingers. It's okay. I understand. But we got to
talk about it. You can't not talk about that.
We just have to ask the questions that other people are wondering. So thank you all so much for sticking with us. And I'll see you all tomorrow night with Blake and Phillip.
See ya.